Harper Audio presents Anyone Who Had a Heart, My Life and Music by Burt Bacharach with Robert Greenfield. Read by Anthony Call, Therese Plummer, and Jeff Woodman. I think that what you write is what you are. Burt. Prologue. Nikki. I had only been married to Angie Dickinson for about 9 months when I started thinking about getting a divorce. Our problems had nothing to do with the fact that she was a much bigger star than me. We just weren't really communicating with one another, and part of that was my fault, because I was still pretty immature at the time, and so totally into my music that I could not have kept a real relationship going with anyone for an extended period of time. When Angie told me she was pregnant, I was so surprised and overjoyed at the prospect of having a child that I completely forgot about all that and began doing everything I could to keep our marriage going. Angie had a difficult pregnancy, and while we were in New York together, she started having what looked like a miscarriage. So she went to see a doctor, who gave her some medication that was partly experimental. Angie was just starting her 6th month when we went to a Dodgers game in Los Angeles. I'd already written Alfie and recorded it with Cilla Black at the Abbey Road Studios in London. But the director of the movie decided he wanted Cher to cut the song so the picture could be distributed in America. I knew I wasn't going to have any input at the session. But on our way home after the game that night, Angie and I dropped in at Gold Star Studios, the magical room where Phil Spector had done all his incredible Wall of Sound records with the Ronettes, Darlene Love, and the Righteous Brothers. Sonny Bono was producing the session. He'd been heavily influenced by Spector, so he had the same kind of setup, 3 percussion players and 3 guitars, and it was not at all the way I heard the song. By then I was used to controlling what was going on in the studio, but Sonny never once asked me, "Do you like the way it sounds?" It was not the way Cher was singing, but what Sonny was doing to Alfie that I found so distressing. I know it was just a coincidence, but as I remember it, Angie's water broke while we were in the studio that night, so we both got out of there as fast as we could and went right to the old Cedars-Sinai Hospital on Beverly Boulevard in Silver Lake. Angie managed to hold on to the baby, so they let her go home. About a week later, an infection started. Her doctor told us she was losing the baby, so Angie went back to the hospital where she was in labor for the next 26 hours. It was a Tuesday, and there was no radio or TV in her room. The All-Star game was being played in St. Louis, so Angie kept asking everyone, "Who's ahead? Is the National League ahead?" On July 12, 1966, our daughter was born, 3 months and 20 days prematurely. She weighed 1 pound, 10 ounces, and the doctors didn't think she would live through the night. But somehow she did, because no one had any idea how long this child might live. Angie and I were told not to give her a name. When a baby was born prematurely back then, their chances of survival were not very good. 3 years earlier, Jacqueline Kennedy had given birth 5.5 weeks early to a baby boy who weighed 4 pounds, 10.5 ounces. The doctors put him into a hyperbaric chamber so he could be given oxygen under high pressure to keep his lungs clear, but he still died 39 hours after being born. If medical science could not keep the son of the President of the United States alive, a baby who weighed 4 times as much as our daughter, how could Angie and I possibly think we would have any better luck? Angie was in the hospital for 5 days before the doctors ever let her see our daughter. They didn't want her to have that memory of her if the baby died. Like clockwork, I would go to the hospital every day to see her by myself. Even after Angie had come out of the hospital and could drive, I would still go there on my own because I thought that if I changed anything I was doing, something bad might happen to our daughter. It had to be my own private thing, so I could commune with her through the window of the preemie ward, where incredible nurses were doing everything they could to keep our baby alive. Day after day, I would stand in front of the preemie ward looking at my tiny little doll of a daughter in her incubator. Even though I knew she couldn't hear me, I would start singing to her. You might think it would have been something I'd written, but the song that got stuck in my head was Hang On Sloopy by the McCoys. I stood there and sang that song to my daughter every day because I was afraid that if I didn't, she wouldn't be there when I came back to visit her the next day.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?